name was Mafiana. Mafiana. She turned trouble into double cheeses. Her name was Mafiana. Mafiana. She turned trouble into double cheeses. Her name was Mafiana. Mafiana. She turned trouble into double cheeses. Her name was Mafiana. Mafiana. She turned trouble into double cheeses.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening in to Mafiana Radio, the place where we live our dreams. And we want to begin the show this evening by speaking to two artists who have come together and from completely different generations to bring the Word of God in a way that the youth of today can understand. So we're going to speak to both artists who are partnering in this endeavor, and we're going to begin with Ms. Melissa Bell Bethe. So good evening, ma'am. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing well. So I'm really excited to be talking to you this evening, because when I read about the pairing of you and Mother Williams, I think with everything that's going on in society, to be able to bridge the generations, to bring a message that's timely for, you know, the youth of today is going to be amazing. So let's rewind back to the beginning and let's talk about you. Okay, because when did you know that you had a gift?
Well, I knew because my mother told me. I didn't know. My mother told me, so I just believe what she said. But she discovered that I could sing when I was in about the second grade, and I was singing the song that I learned from school. I went to Catholic school, and I was singing the song that I learned for Easter. When she heard me sing that song, she said, oh, this girl can sing. So from then on, she started putting me, you know, in the Easter programs at church and things like that, and from there, it was history.
Okay. Great. So, like, I'm a strong believer in your gift making room for you. And to read of all of the people that you've worked with, I mean, you have literally worked with music's finest, from Hezekiah Walker, Lance William and True Worship, J.J. Harrison, we interviewed him last week, and to be vocalist, to be the lead vocalist and step forward, you know, outside of the choir on certain albums, that definitely is testament to your gift. So, how do you balance being that person on the road and still making time for your prayer life at your home church?
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, it's not even a question, because I believe that the reason my gift has made so many opportunities for me is because I'm faithful at home. And I think that's what has carried me this far, and I know it's going to carry me even further. I have turned down opportunities because I was going to miss something important at my church, because I just feel like God will bless me to do something else another time, and it'll be better if I'm faithful to where I started.
Okay. I completely understand that, and that makes sense because it gives you an unshakable foundation.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely.
Okay, because I noticed that, like, when I was reading about your press release, one thing that stuck out to me is that it points out that you are completely submitted to the great leadership of your pastor and his
definitely.
Team. So when people search for that, you know what I mean, in a time when there is so much going on with so many other things that we can talk about but won't, how did you know that, okay, Lord, like, this is where I need to be. This is where I need to be rooted in. I trust this man, you know, to speak for you in my life.
Well, the church that I'm a member of now, the pastor, he's actually my uncle. And he's also more of a father to me now. And so it wasn't even a hard decision for me to align myself to that ministry. And it was so funny, when I started attending, I was really going there to help the music department. Because my sister at the time, she was battling some, you know, illness, and she wasn't really able to serve like she normally does. So I was just stepping in to kind of help the music department until she got back on her feet. Well, I just never left. And I always tell my parents, I said, you know, I never got the right hand of fellowship. I don't know if I'm really a member. At which point you said, girl, get out of here.
Okay. Wow, I love that. So let's talk, if we could, about how you and Mother Williams partnered to work on this project together.
Well, Mother Williams, as you know, is the mom of Lance Williams, and whom I've known for years, and she's just like a mother to everybody that she meets, just a sweet, just a beautiful lady. And Lance approached me with this, you know, this idea that he wanted to do a double recording. And I'm like, really? Like, I had never even heard of it, to be honest with you. I've never even been a witness to it or seen it or anything like that. And so when he proposed that idea to me, next thing you know, it was let's go, let's do it.
Wow, okay. So that's just another example of your gift making room for you in the circle that you were in. That's great.
Absolutely, definitely.
Okay, so if there was one thing you could say to someone who's really trying to live their dream in music, in gospel music especially, because I'm sure that within any genre of music, when you try to make it to the next level, there are definitely obstacles. So, like, how would you speak to someone trying to get to that level, facing that obstacle that maybe may make them want to give up?
I would definitely challenge them to remain faithful to God. And when I say that, what I really want to, I guess, drive home is that your life can't be wrapped up in your dream. It needs to be wrapped up in God, because what if God says, this is not the dream I have for you? So when he says that, your life won't fall apart because it wasn't wrapped up in the dream anyway. It was wrapped up in God. So that is my advice, and I tell it to anybody that I can. Make sure you are solid in God. Make sure you are solid in him, so that when you face the tough time and you face the challenge, your faith is able to rise up in that moment, and so you don't break down, you don't bow out, you're not even giving up, because you know you have a promise from God. And if God says you are going to do X, Y, and Z, I don't care who's in your way, I don't care what's trying to stop you, what's trying to block you, it won't succeed, because when God has a plan, he going to finish it.
All right. And I don't think you can break it down any simpler or any better than that. So I definitely want to thank you for your time this evening. And we want to wish you well and Godspeed in your endeavors. Like, just speaking to you, it's obvious that you are a woman after his heart. And we applaud that. And we call that Mafietta, because anybody that's strong enough to overcome their circumstances, whatever they are, to live their dreams, is someone that's Mafietta. So, again, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you. I really appreciate you speaking to me. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And once you cut that track, we want you to come back, okay?
Listen, you ain't saying nothing. You got it.
All right. Then let's talk soon. Be blessed.
All right, now. Bye-bye.
All right. So you heard it here. That was the great, kind, and good-hearted Melissa Bell Bethea, and we definitely want to thank her for her time this evening. So before we go into our next segment and begin to deal with domestic violence, we're going to take a moment to take a little breather here to switch gears. So we're going to enjoy a nice song that Christian Anderson, gospel artist, left when she was on a few weeks ago called So Good. Let's enjoy.
Set the toes up, I almost lost my mind. Cause I had kids to know how, barely food for my mouth. How could you allow this to happen?
People were laughing
when my bills were stacking. But I knew somebody precious and new love, cooler than cooler, sweet like sugar. When I needed a tune up, I shouted, "Hallelujah." It's already done.
again, we want to thank Christian Anderson for leaving us with that music, because he is good, and it is by him that everything else happens. So we're switching gears now, and we're going to move into the area of dealing with domestic violence, because everybody knows somebody, and knows somebody that has dealt with the issue of domestic violence, and it's something that we don't talk about enough, especially in the African-American community. It seems to sometimes be something that we sweep under the rug when probably we shouldn't. So this evening, what we want to do is kind of talk about what it's like to go through it personally, and then we're going to take it from there to speaking about a gentleman who's taken that same platform and created something great in his latest movie that comes out on the 19th of May. And then we're going to actually speak to a police officer who can take your questions and talk to you about what to do and how to do it should you're faced with that kind of issue. So what we're going to do is begin by speaking with 5-time author Ms. Demeanor. Good evening, lady. How are you?
I am good. I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. So let's start in talking about domestic violence. I don't think it's something you can understand if you haven't been there. Would you say that that's kind of true?
I would definitely say that's true, because we form opinions about other people that have been through it, and we always say, oh, I wouldn't deal with that, or I wouldn't put up with that, or she's stupid for staying, or, you know, he's stupid for staying with her. But it's definitely something that I had to see for my own self, because I was one of those people that just drew conclusions about it.
Right. So what made your perception of change about domestic violence?
Okay. Well, what made my perception change, to be real, to be honest, I was actually the aggressor, I guess you would say. I was the violent person, and I had never been a violent person before. And by me putting my hands on a guy, it changed it from a whole, the aspect of we see on TV a woman's getting beat by a guy and she stays and he continues to do it and we wonder why she stays. But, you know, some people could ask him the same thing, like, why did he deal with me in this situation? Because if I thought he was lying about something or being sneaky, it was just an automatic knee-jerk reaction to just hit him. And I felt like a bully afterwards.
Okay, so when you say you felt like a bully, was it because, well, let's go to the beginning. What would make you react that way? Like, if you felt a certain way, if you felt he'd done something, like, what is it about, what would infuriate you to the point of, like, putting your hands on a man?
Okay, it could be something like, if I felt like he came in too late, you know, I felt that was disrespectful. If you came in and you had been drinking and driving, I felt like that was crazy. You put other people in danger. And then it would be something as minute as him saying something I didn't necessarily like. And, you know, I would go there. And I would always feel bad afterwards because I knew that he wasn't going to hit me back. Well, you know, I thought that for a long time, but, you know, eventually even a dog gets tired.
Oh, okay. So you went from being the aggressor to a person who dealt with it yourself.
Yeah, because the one time that he did finally hit me back, it was bad. It was bad. You know, the police came and everything. And, you know, I really couldn't get upset and be like, oh, I'm going to press charge and do all this, because he had been dealing with this situation for over a year. And I mean, I don't know if it was because of embarrassment that he didn't say anything or wondering what people, because he was genuinely not trying to get me in trouble. But, you know, the situation that happened when I was on the receiving end, it was like, you know, the neighbors heard it and it was just like, oh my goodness. And they thought that he was up there killing me. He wasn't killing me, but it wasn't pretty either. So I've seen it from both directions. And I always, you know, warn those women, you know, when they're hitting the guy, he's walking away from you, and you continue to do stuff, be prepared for what's going to come after that, because he's going to get tired one day.
You know what? I completely agree. And like as I was telling you earlier, like sometimes you get tired, and I don't know what it is about us as women. Sometimes we think that, okay, yeah, I'm going to knock this dude upside his head and he's going to be different tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know where we think that. Like, let me speak about myself. Like, I can remember a dude coming in too late and I'm upset. And here I come with the frying pan and I walk straight upside his head. Pan falls apart. I look at my hand. I'm holding the handle. And that's when it hits me. I'm like, oh, shit, girl, you better run.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, okay, yeah, it felt good to whop him with the pan, but now you got to face the wrath. So, like, I can laugh at it now, and we can laugh at it together now because we've gotten through it. But at the time, when somebody's choking your neck and you don't know if you're going to live to breathe another second of air, like, it's a completely different situation. And, like, one thing that now that I'm out of that situation, like, and it wasn't he just beat me because it was Friday. I probably hit him first, but he probably did something to make me hit him first. Not that you can make somebody hit you, but I'm just speaking from the point of somebody that's been there.
Right.
So I ain't saying do it. I'm just speaking to my story. You know what I mean? Just like you're speaking to yours. So, like, what is it that maybe by us talking, other people can understand. So, like, what is it that you would say after all of this happened made you say, okay, tomorrow's going to be different?
When it came to the point of that I really want to be this type of person, that I want to do this thing and let it become a pattern to where I can't even be in a functional relationship with somebody because I can't keep my hands to myself, do I want to be labeled as that type of person? Do I, you know, because I've never been that type of person. I don't like to fight. I might cuss you out and stuff, you know, to fight if I have to. I don't just go out picking fights. And then, too, also the thought of losing a good person, because it takes a strong person to deal with something like that and be like, you know what, I'm going to love you anyway, even though you keep doing this. But eventually, even when you love somebody, you have to walk away from them sometimes when they're not willing to change. And I was watching something on TV one day, and somebody said that if a person continues, I think it was Tyler Perry, continues to do something to you that's hurtful and they refuse to stop, then they don't care. And if I refuse to stop, that would be a sign of, I didn't care about him, and I was just going to continue to do me. And, you know, it would have ended up badly. Either I would have been in penitentiary or, you know, they would have been pouring out some liquor for me somewhere.
I understand. Like, so do you remember what day or what point was the straw that broke the camel's back? Like, what straw was it that made you say, okay, I'm out. Like, this is over for me.
Well, the thing that I came to the realization of, if I can't be around you and I can't stop having these feelings of wanting to do something to you, I can't do this. It's not going to work. And what actually happened, it took a break. It took taking a break from the person and coming back together and then, you know, being able to work it out. But it took a break. Because it was just so much that had went on at that point to get me mad enough to even do that. I'm like, you know what, we need to fall back and make sure this is what we really want. Because, you know, I don't want to kill you. I want to do things. I want to finish going to school. And I already had it in my mind. I wanted to write books. And I'm like, this would be something dope to put in the book. Because it would be something personal, something real, not contrived, you know. But, yeah, it definitely took taking a break. And it did take some prayer because, yeah. It took the blessings of Abraham.
I hear you. So are you saying that you are with the person and you were able to work it out and y'all are like still together right now?
Yes.
Wow, to God be the glory. That's what's up. Like, that's what's up. If I see the client I was talking about on the street, I might speak depending on how I felt that day. No, I'm just playing. Like, I would always speak, but, like, yeah, whatever. So let's talk about how you move from taking experiences like that, first of all, overcoming them and saying, you know what, that is my past, that's where it is, yes, it happened, so what, I don't care, and this is where I am now. So, like, how did you take that experience and channel it or not into your writing?
Okay, now I know you're familiar with the Mary J. Blige song, It Took a Whole Damn Year. That's what it did. It took a whole year to just, you know, get myself together and be like, I know there are things I want to do, and I have to figure out how to do them. You know, I research stuff online. I was always the type of person to reach out to people. And, you know, having somebody who had published, self-published, Black Rose, she had self-published several books, and I had, you know, been included in some of those books. And I would always listen to her talk about it. We would always make up these crazy things we were going to do. We were going to have this book tour, and we were going to film it and have a YouTube channel, and we were just going to go around the country just having fun, you know, doing what we love with this book. And so I started to get focused on that and stopped thinking about my situation because I never looked like what I was going through. But to add to people, but I know what I felt like on the inside, and I had to purge myself of all of that stuff so I could focus on what I needed to focus on. And once I started, you know, writing, you know, I was able to get rid of some of that junk because I couldn't even worry about it. I was too busy worried about what my characters was going to do than to be worried about, you know, my own problems. So it was a really good thing to keep my mind focused on the past.
So it was like therapeutic.
Very. When I get mad right now and I know I'll be wanting to cut somebody out or punch them in the face, I'm like, let me just go down here and get my laptop, give me some snacks and chill out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, as an author, like, how, what is that like? I don't think, when I explain to my family, yeah, I've been up all night, like, I laid down at 2 o'clock, I was back up at 5, and I wrote till 10. Like, can you kind of explain what that writer life is like when you're looking at deadlines and you know you have to get those pages done? Like, what is that like for you?
Okay, well, my publisher, Cole Hart, he's never given me a deadline. What I have always done in my own mind is I give myself a deadline. And sometimes I stop myself in the foot thinking, okay, I'm going to get this out at this time, and I don't do it. And then I call him and be all sad and be like, Cole, I'm sorry, I didn't get it done. He's like, girl, would you calm down? You have a life outside of these books. You know, just don't put that much pressure on yourself. So right now what I do, I write, and I feel inspired to write. And if I do not want to write, I don't force it. But most of the time when I be out, I could be out shopping. As much as we all love shopping, I be thinking, oh, I cannot wait to get home to write. And all it takes for me, you know, give me a sandwich and a laptop, and I'm cool. I could stay in my room all day writing and just tune out the world. So I think that sometimes people think, oh, it's so easy because you don't have to go to a 9-to-5. But sometimes it's not easy because you might think of a wonderful scene or something in your sleep, and you have to get up and be like, well, let me write this down before. Well, if you're like me, because I forget stuff, like, well, let me just get up and type this before I forget it. And next thing you know, you're sitting up in the sun that came up. But I love it. I love it.
And I think, like, especially when you start to work within your gift or within your craft, it has to be something you love because it's going to take your time, it's going to take your money, and it's going to take your time. And your time, and it's like you said, you look up and the sun is coming up. So I definitely, Ms. Demeanor, want you to hang out because right now we're going to talk to acclaimed director Jamar Hill, who directed Last Love Lost. It is a film that comes out in a few days, actually, on May 19th. So we're going to talk to Jamar because not only is the movie just good, it deals with domestic violence as well. So good evening, Mr. Hill. How are you?
Hey, what's going on, EW? How you doing? Hi, everyone.
We are doing well. So we definitely wanted to holler at you because we know you have a movie coming out in, what, 6 days now?
Yeah, 6 days. Wow. Time flying.
Right, 6 days, that's less than a week. So tell us about Last Love Lost and why we just have to have it.
Well, Last Love Lost is a great passionate drama that touches on domestic violence. And, you know, it's a the everyday type of film that people go through every day in society. And I touched on this film because, you know, it comes through real life situations. And you know, it is an award-winning film that you know, I wrote, directed, and produced, and as well as starred in. And you know, it's a great project. It's a great project.
So I have to ask you a question, because to write, direct, and star in the same thing, like, I just produced something and had it adapted, but you did it all. Like, what was that like to wear all of those hats but still come out with a quality project?
I mean, I think it all depends on your passion, you know, and what you really want and what you believe in. To me, like, I didn't think it was a hard thing to do, because that's just something that I've always used to doing, taking on a lot of tasks. But unlike someone else, it'll probably be a hard task, because they, you know, they wouldn't know how to maintain all of those things. But to be able to do all of that, I mean, it's a great feeling. It's a great accomplishment, and you know, a blessing, most importantly.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I've been able to see or pre-screen Last Love Lost, and there's so much I want to say, but I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm trying to be very, very, very careful. I will be very careful. But there are certain themes that, or certain stereotypes that you actually break in your movie. Like, one thing that your movie does is it encourages people to look for love regardless of what the outside situation may look like. So what were you thinking when you created your main character, as somebody to go through all of that loss but still have so much love to give that would even show through what he looked like on the outside?
Well, me playing Antonio and writing Antonio, I feel like that was really me. You know, that was who I am. I'm a guy, I don't let anything stop me from going, no matter what the situation is, whether it's death, whether it's, you know, losing a relationship or whatever. I feel like it's important to show that you must keep going, because it's life. You know, life, things happen in life. And not saying that you're not supposed to have no emotions, because we all have emotions, but, you know, those things shouldn't stop you from fulfilling your dreams. And, you know, that, and that's just who Antonio is. He understands it was something that happened. It was a tragedy, losing his mother and father in Last Love Lost, witnessing his father killing his mother, then killing himself. So, I mean, it's a strong project, but strong scene. And, you know, I just felt like it was something that I experienced, you know.
Okay. So how to experience something like that and then put your everything into producing it or reproducing it to a point in this film, were there certain parts of that scene that were hard for you, or certain parts during the movie that were hard for you? Because, like I said, I've seen it, and it's like some kind of hardcore stuff. Like, you know, it's going to hit you in the heart. So was any of that hard for you?
It wasn't hard, because, you know, I just had to do it, you know. Not saying that my mom was shot or anything that way. Let me say that and let me recorrect that. But, you know, it was just my job at the same time. You know, you want to be able to sell who you are, who you're portraying. So it wasn't hard to, you know, get emotionally attached into that film, into that scene, or to my character.
And that's something that I like. If I can watch a movie and I'm either mad because you did something, or I'm literally crying like I was in watching Last Love Lost, like, that's when I know that it's a movie. So, like, no, I don't really relate to, you know, maybe somebody getting shot, but just the pain of being in an abusive relationship, you know, or seeing somebody go through something you've gone through is enough to evoke emotion. So, like, to evoke that kind of emotion from your audience, you have to have some kind of crazy, crazy, crazy passion on the back end. So, like, making movies aren't cheap. You know what I mean? And, like, you've done very well with it. You've got distribution. So, like, how did you take your dream, and then you take meeting after meeting, and you're always busy. So, like, how did you, if you had to give us the short version, a road to success short version, 30 to 45 seconds, I mean, what would you say?
I just say keep going. Never let nothing and no one stop you from what you believe in. If you really believe that it's going to happen, you keep going, because nothing happened overnight. So you shouldn't expect short-term goals. You should always expect long-term goals. And that's something that's what gets me. What gets me is I always see the bigger picture of things. So, you know, like I was saying, in life, things don't always go as we plan. You know, you just got to somehow fulfill to look past that and just keep going and believing. And as you process and you see that the short stuff, the short term, you know, you're going to want to keep going for more. And that's just the journey. You know, me, I'm not a settler. I can't even get the word. I don't settle. So it's something that's inside of me that gives me fire to just want to keep going and accomplishing more. Then when you have people believing in you and supporting you, that makes you want to go even more, you know. So that's just my whole strategy of becoming successful.
And you know what? I can appreciate it, because I can say, like, one thing that I've learned is if you want to do something, look at the people that are around you that are successfully doing it. So, like I definitely want to say thank you for, like, mentoring me in a way, because I think, I don't know if I want to say this, women are emotional creatures business, but, like, there were times that I got stuck on some stuff when you had to be like, yo, check your energy. You know what I mean? So, like, that's one thing I admire about you. You've always been able to, like, push past whatever, like, to achieve your goals. So, like, balance is very, very, very important. So, like, mm-hmm. You have it. So when you created these characters, for instance, Streets, like, he mm-hmm. is kind of, like, all over the place. So, like, how did you go from one space to the other?
When you say how did I go one space from the other, you mean, like, creating each character?
Yes, from going, like, with someone who, like, you and Antonio are similar in the fact that, like, you do keep pushing. You both see positive. You know what I mean? So I can see certain mm-hmm. of your characteristics echo through that character. You know what I mean? But, like, when you're writing something that's kind of like the extreme opposite, like, how do you channel that when that's so not who you are?
Like I said before, it's about what you're witnessing in life. So if you got an uncle that's always yelling at you, you're going to remember that. You're going to remember that one particular thing about that uncle. If you got an aunt that always treated you well and gave you that love that your mother didn't, then you're going to always remember that's your favorite aunt. You know, so I think it's not hard to get into those characters or develop them characters when you got main points of things that's always been within you. You know, because I think we all have a favorite aunt, a favorite uncle, a favorite cousin, a favorite best friend, or whatever the case may be. It's just you plug them people into it, you know. And that's what works for me. Is I'm a visual guy, so I visualize each character to break down each character. It makes sense?
It does. It does. So tell us how we get in touch with you. Tell us how we get this amazing. Well, first of all, let's have you give us a little blurb about the movie, because I don't want to try to give a synopsis and say something that, you know, should remain hidden. So let's have you give us a blurb about the movie and then tell us how to get it.
Well, Last Love Lost is about a young man who goes through a big life change, winds up witnessing his mother and father getting killed, and waking up in a coma, finding out that his father shot him. He winds up searching for shelter and a job just to better and get back on his feet. And that's where he finds love at the same time. He winds up working at a dance studio where he has two people, Chris, who's played by Nikia Dillard, and Vanessa, who's played by award-winning actress Tony Belafonte. And
them to help Antonio. And Antonio, you know, he witnessing Vanessa's going through some type of, she's hiding what she's going through, but he can see it because he witnessed his mom. He grown up watching his mom going through it, but you see that Vanessa's going through a domestic relationship. And, you know, they wind up becoming good friends and talking about their life. And, you know, it's like you said, I don't want to give the whole movie away, but you can right now pre-order it at Amazon, Best Buy, Target, Barnes & Noble, FYE. And it'll be out next Tuesday, May 19th, for you to go and get it in the stores.
Wow. Okay, y'all, so you heard it here first. Now let's talk about Tony Belafonte, because she's winning awards from this thing. So what's happening?
Yeah, well, Tony, you know, she's a great actress. She's from New York. You know, she's a hardworking woman, very beautiful, gorgeous woman, talented. She won an award at the Best Actress at the Chelsea Film Festival in New York this past October. You know, she's doing a lot of things right now, in a lot of national commercials, and I'm honored that this was her real first feature film, you know, film, leading role and everything. So, you know, she's a great, great, great spiritual person, as well as actress.
Absolutely. I was very impressed because sometimes you may look at a movie and not really see the emotion you think you should see what's happening. But that is so not the case with her. Like, she was so on point, and you felt everything that she was going through. So I definitely want to say shout out to you. And I understand that you're doing a tour right now, like, where you're speaking out against domestic violence and doing some things with some high school students.
Yes. Yes, actually, tomorrow I'll be going to Westside High School in Newark, New Jersey, talking to the high school kids on domestic violence and promoting my movie. Excuse me. And I'll also be in Atlanta Friday. I'm supposed to be talking to a school. I'm still waiting for them to confirm it tomorrow. So we're going to a school in Atlanta. I'm not exactly know the exact name of the school yet, but I'll be in Atlanta. So in touch and talking on domestic violence as well. So, you know, it's a big tour. It's a nice journey. You know, I'll be hitting up to Clark University and some other colleges. Because I feel, you know, it's graduation weekend, so you guys go talk to them kids and stuff as well.
Awesome. Well, Jamar Hill, again, we want to thank you for coming on. We are definitely supporters of Last Love Lost. And you guys, I want to point out that Jamar Hill is also the director of Mafietta, but we're going to do a whole other show about that. Right now, we're focusing on Last Love Lost. So let's support my brother in the game. On the 19th when it comes out. And again, like you said, you can find it everywhere CDs are sold. Like I saw, what was it? Not CDs, but DVDs are sold. I saw, like, they were everywhere. It was like Amazon, Best Buy, where? Everywhere, right? Let's just, everywhere, right?
What's your name? Can you hear me?
I do now. Say it one more time.
I said, yes, FYE, Barnes & Noble, Best Buy, Target. It'll be in Walmart as well. I just don't have the exact release date for that. It'll be on Redbox, iTunes. It'll be everywhere you can get a DVD. All you have to do is just search the movie Last Love Lost.
All right. Well, you heard it here. Thank you so much, Jamar, for your time, and safe travels to Atlanta this weekend.
You too. So I'll see you later.
All right. Bye-bye. So, you guys, it is great to speak to someone who is living their dream. Like, I've worked with Jamar. His grind is incredible. Like, he is one gentleman that is focused. And, you know, you have to keep blinders on in this thing, and he does a great job of that. So, in the movie Last Love Lost, there is a domestic violence situation. And it gets kind of bad. And I think sometimes we as women don't acknowledge our worth. So because we don't love ourselves or know what we cost, we allow things that we shouldn't. So right now I want to bring on the line live a group of authors that I write with, because in writing urban fiction, a lot of times we deal with issues, you know, that are kind of taboo, that people may not want to speak about. So we're going to do that. You know, tonight we're going to talk about why women accept it, why men dole it out. So, like, I have a great mix of women on this line, so everybody be ready because we're going to chat tonight. So what we're going to do now is, like, Ms. Demeanor, we have you back, and we also have authoress Jessica Wren, who is on the line as well. And right now we're gonna talk about it. So, ladies, let's start with this. You know what? Let's bring one more lady on for good measure. Why not? Right? Okay. So, we have a Ms. Williams on the line as well. Ms. Williams, are you here?
I'm here.
Okay. So we have three different ladies, and I think they're all from different locations. So, Ms. Williams, where can everybody just shout out your state real quick? So we know
North Carolina.
And I'm in Alabama.
And I'm in Austin, Texas.
Okay. So you have three different women from three completely different areas. So based on where you're raised, everybody's taught a little different. You know what I mean? Like everybody acts different in different areas. They wear their hair different. They wear their clothes different. I don't know why, we just do. But regardless, or despite all of that, one thing is the same. Sometimes in an effort to be with men, women accept things that they shouldn't. So, like, we've talked to Ms. Demeanor, but authoress, what can we call you? Can I call you Jessica?
That's fine.
Okay. Because I will be twisted up all night trying to say authoress. I'm still working on it. I feel like I'm tripping what I said. But anyway, so Jessica, like, being a woman and writing urban fiction and definitely reading it to support your peers, like, what would you say are some of the main reasons women deal with the BS?
I would say maybe self-esteem issues, maybe looking for validation. You know, everybody loves differently. Everyone has their own love limit. Everyone is looking for things differently. So, you know, I really don't know. You know, I just think, you know, sometimes we just accept and, or we be in denial, you know, and mm-hmm. you try to make excuses for a person. You try to see the good in a person. Sometimes, you know, I mean, everyone has their own reasoning. Depending on how you were raised, how you were brought up, you know.
So, Ms. Williams, why would you say people say?
I think it's for a variety of reasons. I think one of the more common reasons is that sometimes women want to feel loved. Even if it's not the real thing, the feeling of love, the next best thing, they'll go to great lengths or go through anything just to feel that feeling. Oftentimes, after an abusive situation, the abuser, you know, may be very nice to that, you know, to that victim. They call that the honeymoon phase. Some women live for that honeymoon phase. So they'll endure whatever, they'll go through whatever, just to feel that feeling of being loved.
That is a good point. Great point. So I kind of get why sometimes we can do that, especially considering the honeymoon phase thing that she's talking about. But, like, in the books that we write, a lot of these women are strong women. So let's talk about how we went from, you know, maybe channeling the broken woman to bringing forth, like, a powerful one on pen and paper. So, like, when you, like Ms. Demeanor, for instance, when you, you know, wrote about domestic violence in one of your books, it was a flashback in the second book, but it was at a point where the character was beginning to overcome her situation. So was that something that you wanted to show, that this is something that can be overcome?
Yeah, I definitely wanted to show that it's something that can be overcome, because, you know, when we look at TV, they always just focus on the women being bad as the guy getting locked up and that being the end of the story. But what they don't tell you is that, you know, some of these women are able to come out of situations, and maybe some of them even start foundations. Like there's a lady, Trish Garner, she started a group on Facebook about her different things that she'd been through. And by me being in a group with three different authors, SWP, with three other different authors, Jessica and Shireen Holly Kane and Genesis Woods, I'm sure we all of us have our own different ways of dealing with it in our books. You know, some of the women wise up, and some of them you kind of be like, girl, please get your life together. But I think that, you know, I think that it's definitely something that you can overcome, because if not, I wouldn't be around.
You know what? I wouldn't either. So I will have to agree with you there. So what I want to do is, like, ladies, it isn't oftentimes that women who have maybe gone through a domestic situation or maybe are currently in a situation can sit down and actually speak with an officer of the law that can tell you what is self-defense, what domestic violence is. And, like, we have an officer here. So, like, we're working with kind of like, a few minutes here. So, like, instead of bringing, you know, like, all of our callers on live, like, I'd like to have us authors just kind of ask Mr. Officer some of the questions that we may have wanted answers to when we were enduring that kind of situation, or just questions that you think the masses may need answers to, period, because it isn't often that we have access to a police officer sometimes that we trust that can give you what it is straight up. So are you ladies okay to stay on the line and speak to Mr. Officer this evening?
Sure.
Okay. So good evening, Mr. Officer. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you this evening?
We are doing well. So we always start every show the same way. Are you, in fact, an officer of the law?
Yes, I am. An 18-year veteran of law enforcement, and I'm currently the OIC for my police department.
Okay, OIC. I know what that means because I do. But, like, for some of us that may not, OIC is...
Officer in charge.
Okay. I could have called you something else, but, like, we're not going to do that here. So, yes. Okay. Like, a lot of times when people go through domestic violence situations, what is it like from the perspective of an officer to maybe go to a home where you know what it is, you see what's happened, and you have a woman saying, no, I'm all right, and her eyes sticking out her face?
It's a tragedy we see all too often, because it only repeats itself and it gets worse with time. And it usually ends in either two things, incarceration or death of one of them. And there's a third option, which is counseling, which could help everybody, but we very rarely see that option taken.
Right. We're just going to go down the line. So, Misdemeanor, like, as a survivor, you know what I mean, like, of something like that, what is one question that you think could have helped you when you were enduring, though? When you were enduring. Not when you were dishing out, but when you were enduring.
Okay, my question is a little bit bizarre. I just want to know from an officer's perspective, when the police are called, and let's just, say that the situation has happened and both people maybe are bruised, are battered, are bleeding, or whatever the situation may be. Why is it that the man is always automatically assumed to be the aggressor? Is it because they don't normally report being hit by women, or is it because that's just normally what the case is?
There's a couple different factors, and you mentioned one of them. Most men don't report being hit by women because we're caught up in this whole masculine thing. A woman hits me and I'm not going to report her. I can handle that. That's no problem. I mean, I myself was a victim of domestic violence at the hands of a woman, so I understand way too well what that feels like. You don't want to report her. And the other factor is, until recently, most court systems didn't recognize domestic violence as being a woman against a man. They only recognized it as a man against a woman, and most laws were written that way to penalize the man. And I try to tell guys every day, you know, don't worry about being masculine, because if she calls and say you hit her, you're going to jail. If you call, you have opportunity to avoid incarceration and get at least the man's side of the story out.
Okay,
so we're going to move on down to Jessica. Like, we didn't speak to your domestic violence situation, but as an author and reader of urban fiction, it's something that we encounter quite often. So if you had a question for Mr. Officer, what is it? He's here.
I personally haven't experienced domestic violence, but I know a lot of people who have.
Mm-hmm.
And I always just kind of wonder, you know, what makes a person kind of defend the aggressor or go back?
The easiest and quickest answer would be a sort of twisted, I guess, love, where, you know, you want to believe the aggressor will not, the crime again, won't do it anymore. You believe him or her when they say, you know, I'm sorry, it won't happen again.
Mm-hmm.
But in my experience, I've very rarely seen one act of domestic violence go unrepeated unless there was some type of intervention after that first act.
So I have a question. As an officer, like, I don't know how often, but with all of the years that you haven't had in the force, like, I would assume, maybe I'm wrong, but I would assume that you've dealt with a situation where somebody's been fired mad because husband, boyfriend, girlfriend has been cheating, and they catch them when they either dye their clothes and beat them up, or, like, let's say somebody caught somebody out, you know, cheating or whatever. Like, what kind of consideration do you give that person's reaction when you're should you deal with a situation like that?
Well, it all depends on their reaction. If they go hands-on, the law is very clear in terms of anyone showing signs of injury, they tell us an arrest has to be made of the offender at that point. But if it's just verbal, dying clothes, things of that nature, at that point it's up to the whoever was caught out acting up whose clothes got dyed, whether or not they want to file a criminal complaint. 9 times out of 10, they don't. They just want to get out of there and spend the night somewhere else, which is usually the best option in that case because cooler heads always prevail. Putting them together is only going to lead to more trouble.
Okay, ladies, so if you dye his clothes, he decides if you go to jail or not. If you hit him, you gone. So get it together. Okay. Ms. Williams, what's your question for Mr. Officer?
Okay. As from a legal standpoint, as a bystander, you know, looking on to an abusive situation, is there anything legally that a friend can do that is witnessing this in the event that that victim will not speak up?
use of force law says that you are able to, if you're witnessing someone being assaulted or whatever, you're allowed to use the same amount of force that person would be able to use if they were able or willing. Now, if physical intervention isn't necessary, I recommend you don't do it, but by all means, pick up the phone, call 911. You don't even have to talk on it. Well, unless it's a cell phone, you have to give your location, but a landline house phone, pick up 911 and just listen for the operator to pick up, and then as soon as they do, hang up, because police have to come to 911 hang-up calls. We get them all the time, and we do have to show up. So I would recommend against physical intervention if it's avoidable. But if it's unavoidable, you would be allowed to use the same force as the person who's being assaulted would be allowed to use by the law. Which means, you know, if you see your friend get smacked, you can't pull out the shotgun and blow the guy away. That's too much force. You would be able to slap him back, jump on him, all of that. But in that case, I would definitely recommend calling 911 first.
So, as you can witness by listening to Mr. Officer, like, there is a way to do anything. You know what I mean? There's not a way to go mess with somebody, like, for no reason, but there is a way to defend yourself should you encounter those kind of situations, and that's why it's so important that while we have access to Mr. Officer and his knowledge, that we definitely take advantage of it. So, like, I know we probably shouldn't stereotype people, but there are certain indicators of abuse. So, like, in your tenure, have you seen any consistent indicators that maybe women should kind of gauge in the beginning? Or even men, because we've heard it here that women can be the aggressor. So, like, what are some things that we can look out for, though?
You know, it varies quite a bit. I've seen it from the lowest member of society to one of the most respected members of the society. There is no real definite indicator until it happens, but I would recommend that person's unwilling to view their actions as a problem after it happens the first time, that you would definitely get away from them because it will repeat itself. Because anyone who doesn't recognize that that's an issue or believes that it's okay to put their hands on someone they love is going to repeat. But as far as indicators, I haven't been able to, in 18 years, see any real indicators that would tip them off and say, oh, that guy's going to go home and beat his wife or she's going to kick her husband in the groin when she gets home today. You can't really find any of those indicators in people. It's varied in many different ways.
Gotcha. Okay, so you can't pick them out of a crowd, ladies, so you just have to be really selective with what you're bringing home. So, Mr. Officer, I definitely want to thank you for your time this evening. And again, like, what last question for you, what advice would you give someone who really just wants to get away and get safe? You know, like, sometimes women leave and men follow them and, you know, they come back home and the same thing happens all over. So, like, are there resources that police departments can provide for someone who is literally trying to disappear?
Yes, most police departments have access to, I know we have what's called a domestic violence response team, and they will come out, they will provide you with resources, a place to stay for you and your children if necessary. Legal help, they'll help you get the police will help you get a restraining order, but they'll help you in terms of keeping it enforced. That's the biggest reason why most restraining orders fail, because the guy will make contact and he'll be nice and kind. He'll be that guy that you first met. But one thing about restraining orders, and I know in our state, it cannot be dismissed without your permission. If you get a restraining order, it is for life. And I can't say keep it just to have it there to punish him in case he acts up, but if you're thinking about dismissing it, you really need to think long and hard about it. There's also various women's shelters. I know our county prosecutor's office has a Office of Victim Witness Advocacy, so most district attorneys, prosecutors, they will have those resources available as well. There are a lot of things to help you. It just takes a little looking sometimes, but getting that restraining order is probably the biggest thing, and I plan on teaching my daughter how to shoot, because in the end, the restraining order is still just a piece of paper.
And I have a question, because I know this is way off domestic violence, and you ladies feel free to chime in, but, like, I heard you say that you want to teach your daughter how to shoot. And, like, for me, like, I want to learn how to shoot. I want my son to learn how to shoot, because people are so adamant about their gun rights until certain people get guns, and then it's, oh, no. So, like, what is the proper way, or what is a proper way to teach your children to handle but respect a firearm?
The best way would be, first off, for you to take a class that teaches gun safety first and foremost, because everybody's curious what the bullet looks like in the barrel. That's the last time you should ever look at it, or the worst time, I should say. But take a class for gun safety first. And then once you've gone through those classes and your child is, and you can tell when your child's mature enough to deal with it and they're old enough, that I would put them through that same gun safety class. And once you've both been through the class, you can spend time at the range or find an instructor who could show you both how to shoot. I mean, Let me know. I'm an expert marksman. I've been an instructor for 10 years now. I can help you out.
Uh-oh. Miss Officer can hook you up, ladies, with shooting at the range. Let me be clear. With shooting your gun, right? At the you know what I'm talking about, right? At the range, okay.
Yes,
that went way
range.
Left, sorry. Yes, Mr. Okay, I'm done. All right, thank you so much, Mr. Officer, and thank you for your great marksmanship. Like, should someone definitely need that help, we'll definitely reach out to you to be a resource. Because, like, you see so many people that have guns, but you really wonder how many people really know how to properly use and clean them. Because, like, being an Army wife and, like, hearing my sister's in the Army as well, hearing her talk about guns, like, I've heard her be quick to tell people the last thing you need is a gun because you're not going to know how to clean it. You're not going to know how to clear it. So, like, it's just a bad idea. So is that why you encourage the education?
Yeah, you definitely need to learn how to clean it and clear it and all that stuff. And most people don't do that because they're not comfortable with it. If you're going to get a gun, don't just sit it up in the closet and say it'll be there when I need it. Get familiar with it, shoot it, get used to it. That's the only way you're going to be comfortable with it, and you'll maintain it and things and be able to handle it safely.
All right, Mr. Officer, please excuse the slip of the tongue. It is definitely the head and not the heart. Thank you so much for your time this evening, and we look forward to speaking to you next week.
All right, take care. Have a good evening.
All right, you too. Thank you.
You too.
Talk about putting your foot in your mouth. If I could crawl under a rock. Oh, my goodness. But life happens, and it's live, baby. This is live. So, what I'd like to do is I know that Ms. Demeanor has a book coming out this Saturday. We have authoress Jessica Wren on the line. So if we could just wrap up this evening, ladies, with you telling everybody listening how to get in touch with you. Like, tell them who you are and how to connect with you so we can follow your books, read them, and we can talk to you about the craziness that comes in between those pages.
I'll go ahead and let Ms. Demeanor go first.
Okay, well, I'm on Facebook under Authoress M. Slack on Facebook because they were stripping about my name. And I also have a fan page, Author Ms. Demeanor, and it's MZDEMEANOR. And I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I might be down the street from your house. You don't never know where I'm going to be. So I'm pretty much trying to be everywhere.
Great. All right, so reach out to her. She has that book coming out this Saturday, y'all. So check her out. And Jessica?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter, also Instagram and Facebook. And I'm like Miss Demeanor. You know, I'm just everywhere. I'm cool. You're welcome to hit my inbox. I answer questions. I, you know, comment back. I'm very humbled. And down and check out the worst spots ever. It's a mess. It keeps you on, you know, the edge of your seat. It's very entertaining, and it's very relatable.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so what we're going to do, Ms. Williams, thank you so much for being on the line and being a part of our conversation tonight. So as a gift, yeah, I'm still stuck on that gun thing. I am so sorry. Like, I didn't mean to say that like that. But, Ms. Williams, as a thank you for being on the show this evening, we are going to get you a copy, of The Worst Thoughts Ever, and we're going to get you Ms. Demeanor's new book that's coming out this Saturday. So thank you, ladies, for being on the show this evening. Stop
thank
laughing.
You.
You're making it hard.
Thank you so much
okay.
for having me, and thank you for the copies of the book. I will be sure to read them both.
Thank
All
you.
Right. It was
nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. All right, ladies. So thanks for putting up with me this evening, and thanks, everybody, for listening to Mafietta Radio. So, like, if you're looking for the show where nothing goes wrong and nobody laughs, this ain't it. But if you want to listen and have a good time and rock out with some really cool people, tune in, and we'll talk to you next week. All right. Be blessed.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.